40 is on the board. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Kotikrama Nivartantyam. Kotikramo Nivartantyam. Svabhavam Ihayoshitam. Svabhavam Ihayoshitam. Inmam Pata Buddham Sparte. Himham Bhata Buddham Svate Yadaham Tuatitendriyam Yadaham Tuatitendriyam Kotikramo Nivartantyam Svabhavam Ihayoshitam Imam Bhata Buddham Svarte Yadaham Tuachitendriyam Totikramo Nivartantyam Svabhavam Ihayoshitam Imam Bhata Buddham Svarte Yadaham Tuachitendriyam Vikramo Vikratanta Svabhavam Ihayoshita Dhimam Bhata Buddham Svarte Yadaham Tuvatitindriya Atikramaha. offense. Anudvartantya, following. Swabhavam, her nature. Iha, here. Yoshitaha, of the woman. Dhik, condemnation. Mam, unto me. Abhutham, not conversant. Svaate, in what is good for me. Yet, because aham, I, to, indeed, ajita indriha, unable to control my senses. Translation: this woman, my wife, has adopted a means that follows her nature, and therefore she is not to be blamed. But I am a man, therefore all condemnation upon me. I am not at all conversant with what is good for me, since I could not control my senses. This is Kashyapa Muni speaking. Please repeat: this woman, my wife, has adopted a means that follows her nature, and therefore she is not to be blamed. But I am a man, therefore all condemnation upon me. I am not at all conversant with what is good for me, since I could not control my senses. The natural instinct of a woman is to enjoy the material world. She induces her husband to enjoy this world by satisfying his tongue, belly, and genitals, which are called jiva, udara, and upashta. A woman is expert in cooking palatable dishes so that she can easily satisfy her husband in eating. When one eats nicely, his belly is satisfied, and as soon as the belly is satisfied, the genitals become strong. Especially when a man is accustomed to eating meat and drinking wine and similar passionate things, he certainly becomes sexually inclined. It should be understood that sexual inclinations are meant not for spiritual progress, but for gliding down to hell. Thus, Kashyapa Muni considered his situation and lamented. In other words, to be a householder is very risky unless one is trained and the wife is a follower of her husband. A husband should be trained at the very beginning of life. Kumara acharit pragyo dharman bhagavataniha. Srimad Bhagavatam 761. Prahlad Maharaj speaking. During the time of brahmacharya, or student life, a brahmacharya should be taught to be expert in Bhagavad Dharma, devotional service. Then when he marries, the wife is faithful to her husband and follows him in such life, the relationship between husband and wife is very desirable. However, a relationship between husband and wife without spiritual consciousness, but strictly for sense gratification, is not at all good. It is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam 12.2.3 that especially in this age, Kali Yuga, dampatye pirichu hetu, the relationship between husband and wife will be based on sexual power. Therefore, householder life in this Kali Yuga is extremely dangerous unless both the wife and husband take to Krishna consciousness. End of purport. I read text 38 again. Upon hearing did his request, Kashyapa Muni was very much aggrieved. Alas, he lamented, now I face the danger of the impious act of killing Indra. It's a little purport. Although Kashyapa Muni was eager to fulfill the desires of his wife Diti, when he heard that she wanted a son to kill Indra, his jubilation was immediately reduced to nothing because he was averse to the idea. Text 39, Kashyapa Muni thought, alas, I have now become too attached to material enjoyment. Taking advantage of this, my mind has been attracted by the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of a woman, my wife. Therefore, I am surely a wretched person who will glide down towards hell. 40. This woman, my wife, has adopted a means that follows her nature, and therefore she is not to be blamed. But I am a man, therefore all condemnation upon me. I am not at all conversant with what is good for me, since I could not control my senses. In this story, not only this, but most of the stories in the Bhagavatam, we hear how material life in the material world is so dangerous. It's so entangling. This story is taking place way back in Satyuga, very very good time, you know. Everyone more or less is in a mode of goodness, living for 100,000 years, old age, and those problems are practically not there. everyone is a devotee. It's a very very good time. But even there, the problems are coming. You see, you cannot stop the. The material world means problem. It's not a place you come to. It's not a natural place. We're supposed to be in the spiritual world. The living entity is the eternal servant of Krishna. And he belongs in the spiritual world, some part of the spiritual world, according to his desire, worshipping the particular Lord of his desire. That is the perfection of the existence. But material world, then, when somehow or other, when one comes here, then that remembrance of the Lord and the relationship is taken away. So it's a place where the forgetful souls come. Those who forget God or want to forget God or act independently of God or want to take God's position, which we summarizes envious of God. Those who are envious of God come here. So everyone is in that. Everyone has that envy of God to varying degrees. Envy of God means, oh, you see something, hear something, oh, I would like that. I would like to enjoy that. That's envy of God. The normal existence, but that's because everything is. It's meant for the Lord's enjoyment. In the spiritual world, that consciousness is there. Everyone is perfectly satisfied in serving the Lord. And they use everything in the service of the Lord. And there's so much facility there in the spiritual world. Everything is at your fingertips. Anything you desire, unimaginable opulences and power and potency is there. But they never use it for themselves. They never use it for their own enjoyment. That's the qualification of going to the spiritual world. Otherwise, you would misuse it. If we had that ability now, we would certainly use it for our sense gratification, for our own pleasure, right? More or less. But there, that's absent because they haven't forgotten the relationship with Krishna, and they understand his position, and they love him, and then they want to act for his pleasure. So they use whatever necessary for his pleasure. So they only use that facility for the Lord's pleasure. But it's unlimited, and they're at their call. Just like it says, Maya Devi is waiting with folded hands to serve the devotees. So that's the difference. Here, now we, in the material world, once we have the good fortune to be woken up, to be told of our actual position, and we're actually suffering in the material world due to being away from our real nature. We're suffering due to missing the experience of eternality, bliss, and full knowledge. Place is ignorant, material world is ignorant, temporary, and full of problems. Right? That's our experience. Of course, there's good times, so then we think life is not so bad. Why are you so negative? Why are you saying everything is bad? Well, it's only bad, everything is bad, even the good times are bad, in relationship to the experience of Satchitananda. But if you forget that experience, if you have nothing to relate it to, if you have nothing to relate, if you can't relate to Satchitananda, then, you know, the best of the material world is okay, it's good. Because there's nothing better, right? But when you got something better, or the best, then you can see that everything is pale. No rasa there, no real pleasure there compared to that. But when we forget that, then we say there's pleasure here. So you can only really say it, or you can only really understand it from the realized platform. So when we say this place is a place of misery, we always say that material world is a place of misery. We don't actually think so. Right? We think actually life's not so bad. And we're still endeavoring we're endeavoring in this world to show ourselves something, right? We want people to think of us in a certain way. The false ego is still there. What we wear, how we talk, the way we, you know, adjust, so that people will be recognized as be popular and, you know, have a lot of friends and a lot of facilities like that. It hasn't gone away. Right? It's still there. So we're still trying to enjoy this facility for ourselves. So, and of course, everyone is different in the material world. Here it's emphasizing the difference between the man and woman. It's emphasizing the situation of the woman, because the women are different than men, slightly different. Of course, as we heard yesterday, it's not a general categorization. It's not that every woman is in the coming to shlokas, it's really heavy things about the lady, heart like a razor, and you know all that stuff. But it's not that every woman is like that. It's not that men aren't like that. Also, there's like, you know, a quarter of an inch difference between men and women. That's it. So but they're emphasizing the difference, but it's actually negligible. But it's a fact, but there's a difference, that the women are the weaker sex. Not in every case, but that's generally what we find. Baba said a 15-year-old boy, he can go anywhere alone, but a 15-year-old girl can't. Here, Kashyapa, he's a sage, Prajapati's sage. Great soul. He's there and he's right up there, Kali Yuga, very high birth. He's a son of Brahma, I think, isn't he? Middle son of Brahma. Kashyapa, very, very exalted birth. But he's a good guy. But still, now he's got a problem. He's become implicated in murder. Not even manslaughter, it's premeditated murder from his wife. against his will, against his wishes, against his desire. He didn't do anything wrong. But he's saying, he said, but this, my wife, she's acting according to her nature, so she can't be blamed. The woman is never wrong in these situations. Because the women, because they are, Prabhupada says, like children. Therefore they need protection, they need to be guided. They need to be protected, because if children are left alone to do what they want, you know what happens, right? You won't go to school, you won't do all those things. You have to. There has to be pressure on children, not the modern idea, let them do how they feel, and that's not a very good proposition. Children have to be controlled. because they're not, the intelligence is not developed. So similarly, the women have to be protected like that, otherwise. So here it's saying how the nature is like that. Women, she's devising a program to kill Kashyap, to kill Indra. He was involved in killing her sons. So naturally she's upset. What mother wouldn't be upset? So, but she's not going to say to, she can't do anything about it. She can't kill Indra. He's the king of heaven, powerful. But she thinks, you know, she's thinking long term. She's very broad-minded, very intelligent. I can't do it, but let me get a benediction. Let me get a son who can kill him. And she knows the potency of her husband. He's a sage, he's a rishi. He has so much power, he can give it. So she doesn't go out and say, please, can I want a son to kill Indra, because they say, you know, get this idea out of your mind. What are you talking about? He's crazy, you know. He's the king of heaven, he's a demigod, he's a good guy, and, you know, he'd make mistakes, but forget it. So then she smiles at him and behaves very sweetly, and she behaves very humbly, and she cooks so nicely for him, and very attentive to all his needs. For a long time, like he's serving like that. So this is her nature. Chanakya says that women are four times more clever, or cunning. Clever is a better word, politically, than men. Because they say this, actually they want this. That's why the men can never understand a woman if she doesn't want, because she's saying this, and even if you catch on, she's got two more starts before you actually get to what she wants. So after a long time, then Kashyapa says, you know, my wife, you know, she's so much austerity, she's performing, and so many menial tasks, she's so surrendered, she's so sweet, she never complains, and she's, no, let me give her a benediction. She deserves it. You know, she's really chaste and really sweet and really nice. So he says, I'm very pleased with your behavior. You're such a good wife. Please have a benediction. I want to give you a present. Please take a benediction. Well, since you ask, so then she tells him what she wants, and he says, oh my God, what have I done? I've given her benediction, and now I'm going to be implicated in killing Indra. But being very intelligent, he does resolve the situation in the coming verses. We will understand how he does it. But here, he's saying, he's not getting angry, you envious woman. He's not saying things like that. That he's saying that she's following her nature, her motherly nature. Someone killed my sons, I want to get them back. That's all. He says she's not to be blamed. He said, I'm to be blamed. So he's condemning himself. He says his character, a very good character, very noble, and very intelligent. It's my fault. I became attached to her, and she caught me off guard. And obviously I hadn't trained her properly. I didn't protect her properly. I wasn't doing my duty properly, somehow or other. Although he seemed to be doing everything nicely. But it's my position as a man, just like he's judging her position, nature as a woman, he said, but it's my position as a man to protect her. And I failed to do so. So he's actually blaming himself. So the man is always to blame. In every case, the man is always to blame. The woman may do 90% and come right up and present everything, but it's always the man that makes the move. In sensual inclinations. So he always... The woman may prepare all the same, but it's a man that always, she leaves it up to the last minute for the man. And the man is helpless, swayed by the sweet charms and talk and nice looks and whatever the ability they have as a woman, as a nature they have. So it's a man. It's always a man's fault, you see. So therefore, the women are not to be blamed like that. The man is to be blamed for not. Just like here in Bengal, if someone steals something, people, if you tell someone stole this, people will laugh at you. Why? That means you didn't really value it. Otherwise, you'd have protected it. If you don't value it, then you let it get stolen, so that means you really didn't value that object. It's the same situation. Women should be protected. That is the job of the man. So there's two roles there, which are, you know, the ideal is given in the scripture, the ideal behavior. Of course, it's very difficult to be ideal. Kashyapa, he was practically an ideal person. what was his fault? But now he's got into this big mess. So this is what it's like in the material world. Even the best of the living entities, he's got a human birth. He's in his Satyuga. He's a sage. He's a rishi. He's a very advanced devotee. Still, he's had a problem. So what to speak of us, little earthlings? not easy. It's always problematic. And so he's blaming himself. Very noble. of course this mentality is, you will see it as the story evolves. Indra, when he finds out that about the child in the womb is going to kill him, he uses exactly the same tactics as the lady, as a woman. He goes and serves her very nicely for a long, long time. He waits on her, and she's a wife of a brahmana, and she becomes pleased with him. But he's just waiting for a chance that she doesn't follow this vow. He's going to give her a vow that she be. His idea is to give her. She wants a son that can kill Indra. He said, "Okay, I'll give you this rata to do." His intention actually is to turn her into a Vaishnava by following this rata, and then she'll forget all about her material things. That was his idea, which worked. So Indra has the same mentality. He's actually, you can say, he's even worse. Because he's only, you know, nobody killed his children. He's just waiting for a chance to kill an unborn child in the womb. That's pretty heavy. So, although it's condemning a woman's consciousness in this section, Indra's equally as bad. He's looking for an opportunity to kill an unborn baby. Very nice. And out of fear of losing his position, and maybe his life also. but that's the nature. Everyone is fearful of their situation. You know, it's mentioned later, I think. It's just to save this body, which is meant for food for the fish or for the dogs or for the vultures or for the fire. That's the end result of the body. But we place so much importance because we're so much attached to this body, which, like I say, is destined to be food for somebody else in a short while, in 100 years. But in the meantime, we're still so attached to it. So it's very difficult to overcome this. In the previous section, then Chittaketu, he was really an enlightened person. Still, he got into trouble, right? Oh no, he was a great soul. He was greater than his consciousness. He was equal or even more than than this rishi. Anyway, they were both, you know, almost perfect souls, but they became entangled inadvertently. And they became entangled in material world activities. But his Tichagata's glory was, when there's a problem, how do you act? When there's a problem, what do you do? When there is a verse, how do you? That shows the real character of a person. If they try to defend the position, then that's material. If they try to go against, defeat the opposition, that's material, because now you're dealing with the material energy. When problems come, obviously we move away, right? Because we don't like to suffer. And when we see an opportunity for happiness, we go towards it. There's a natural instinct there because we like happiness. And so these opportunities, these distressful conditions, threats and the happy situations come, they're coming according to our karma. They're being produced. The situation is being produced where we can experience the results of our previous pious or impious activities. That's the material world. That's all that goes on. And if you bite, if you take it, if you actually believe that, you can actually enjoy that situation. And you can actually escape from that situation. Superficially, you may do it. The experience is real that you're enjoying. The experience is real that you've got out of trouble. But it's only one step, because it hasn't stopped your karma, you see. So maybe you've done something which you can avoid, sidestep that situation, but it'll come again because it's your karma. So you can't really avoid that. The happiness and distress are already fixed. So you can't enjoy anymore, and you can't suffer anymore. Then you're destined. So why are we making plans? This is Prahlad Maharaj's proposition. Why are you working so hard for happiness, and you're working so hard to get rid of problems? And the problems come anyway. Even though we make all endeavors to avoid problems, they come anyway. And similarly, we don't have to work for happiness. The happiness comes automatically. Just as the distress comes automatically, so the happiness comes automatically. You don't have to really work for it. So this is Maya. So all time we're working just for those two things. That takes a whole day. Except when you're sleeping. Then, because you have to rest to continue defending and enjoying, right? You need energy to do that. So that occupies the whole of one's life. That's material existence. Just those two things. Satisfying those two needs. Therefore, there's no time to serve Krishna, because material nature is relentless. Right? Relentless. It's, you know, you got to, every day you've got to eat so many times. You have to go to the bathroom, you have to bathe, you have to sleep every day, you know. You can't stop these things. Huh? They're just the main things. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. They're just the main things that preoccupy us, and all the other things that we have to do, all the other problems we have to try to avoid and succeed in life and get our happiness. Everyone is preoccupied in the material world. That is Maya's business. How to distract, how to keep the living entities engaged in play. Playing with me, trying to beat me, to outsmart me, or to try to enjoy me, my nice side. That's Maya's game. And she's got everyone caught nicely like this. everyone is falling for it. Because there's no... because, you know, Maya's nice, isn't it? Sense gratification is fantastic, let's face it. What is better? If you don't know any better, if you haven't experienced the spiritual happiness, Satchidananda, then what? The next best is sense gratification, material sense gratification. That's why it's promoted, because our society, every society practicing in the world, is promoting that you're the body and the purpose of life is to enjoy the senses. What else are they saying? Stay young, live long, enjoy hard, and be successful and knowledgeable and smart and rich. Right? That's success. That's all. There's no real. What's it about? There's no real meaning to life other than that. There's no real direction in the life other than that. So this, because we've forgotten Krishna, and as the age goes on, everyone forgets Krishna. In Satya Yuga, the government were devotees. It's much easier. In Kali Yuga, it's different, you see. And it gets worse and worse. Prabhupada quotes from the 12th canto here, he said that the marriage will be based simply on sexual prowess. A woman will be very fortunate if she has a wife. That's it, as Kali Yuga goes on. And practically you can see nowadays the adverts and the whole society is very, very, is very sexually oriented, right? The clothes, the adverts, the mannerisms, the dancing, and you know, it's all to promote that. It's going that way. So you can see it's coming. But along with that gets, you know, everything else gets, you know, the weather gets worse, the food gets less, and the standard of living goes, you know, it gets horrible. And then it becomes so degraded that people are very small, 18 inches tall, nothing to eat, running around frantically, so much adverse conditions. And then there's no more religion. I mean, what is irreligion is taken as a religion. If someone takes a bath every day, he's considered saint. That's the standard of being a saint. You take a bath every day. So, you know, laugh. You can laugh. But they're probably in Treta Yuga, they're probably laughing at us in Kali Yuga, our standards of, you know, spirituality. You know, really. So that happens, and because there's no brain substance left, then the next incarnation, Kalki, just comes and kills. Someone asks, how come those people get born in Satya Yuga? Because that's like, it's really good karma, right? So I said, I would imagine, I'm just thinking, if you could guess, that it's so bad at the end of Kali Yuga. The existence is so miserable. You probably don't have much bad karma left. You know, just living, just existing, is suffering. Nothing to eat, no milk, no grains, no vegetables, no fruit. What do you need? It's a very, very difficult situation. Who is the biggest, most ruthless, they will be running the country. That's how it would be. So it would be like, you know, animal life, the law of the jungle. So the living is so tough. It says even the grihasthas, the householders, they go to the forest. It's better to eke out a living with get some roots and something to eat rather than try to work and pay all those exorbitant taxes. It's just impossible. They make it just impossible for you to exist. So it's so miserable. So then you know it's just suffering from birth to death. It's just suffering. So you're going to lose up a lot of bad karma. So then probably no bad karma left. Then you take birth in Satya Yuga when Kalki comes. So we see there's not actually a lot of difference. Like I said, it's only this much difference between a woman's mentality and a man's mentality, because we both have the same enjoying propensity. Everyone is selfish in the material world. Says he said maybe women is a little more selfish here. But it's the same thing. How much more? What does it mean? One is selfish this much and one is selfish this much. It's practically the same thing. Everyone is self-interested. So that is the big problem in the material world. Then all those self-interested people, they come together and they've got to try and live peacefully and harmoniously. So it's actually a bit of a joke in the material life, because it's actually impossible. because it's all more or less based on mutual exploitation. You exploit me, I'll exploit you. You satisfy my senses, I'll satisfy your senses. And when you don't satisfy my senses, or I'm tired of that, then we move somewhere else. So there is no real oneness, and as what they're dreaming of will never actually happen. Material, because the material world it's a prison house. Durga is a fortress. You don't expect a prison. Prison's not a nice place to be in. It's not the ideal place you talk about. Isn't it? You don't want to make a prison is not meant to be made ideal and comfortable. A prison is a place where people have to learn a lesson. So it's you're being deprived of a lot of your of what you necessities. You only get the bare necessities of life. It's meant to restrict one's freedom and ability. So that's what the material world does, because our true nature as spiritual living entities, we have unlimited potency. You can do anything you want. In the spiritual body, you can do anything you want. You can have anything you want. Krishna shares that opulence with his devotees. So you can always become, you can have the same form of Krishna, right? Sarupya Mukti. So you can have all those opulences. You can expand yourself. I was reading the other day how Krishna, when he expands himself into 16,000, he married 16,000 queens in Dwarka. So that means, and they all got married at the same time. So that means Devaki and Vasudev, mother and father have to be there, and probably his best man, probably Uddhava, he has to be there. So that means Krishna, they share Krishna's power of being simultaneously one and many. So they also expand, right? So everyone else is also expanded 16,000 times. That's arranged by Yogamaya. They don't purposefully do it. Krishna does it purposely, and he arranges all that, but they still have that. So Krishna extends his potency to also his pure devotees, all those in the spiritual world. So there is unlimited facility and potency. So that's what we're missing here. So now, there's always a feeling of dissatisfaction, because we can never be satisfied in the material world. And there's no success stories in the material world. We can never be really satisfied. There's always that dissatisfaction. The nature of man and woman, there's a little difference there. The women are more easily satisfied. Prabhupada mentions, if you give the woman a house, some children, some bangles and some food there, then she's satisfied, she's happy. Right? You see? But the man, he won't, there'll be something else. He's not satisfied with just that. His intellect will go on, there's something else. Women don't go so far with the intellect, generally. They go, their bodies are not so good at that. Because according to science, the different parts of the brain, different parts of the psyche, the intellectual and the rational, or the emotional, they work simultaneously in the woman, and the man, they work separately. So therefore, the man, he can go further. The woman, she goes too philosophic so far, then the emotional brings her back. The man, he can go much further. So it's very difficult for the woman to stay in the mode of goodness. She'll keep fluctuating with the passion and that. But a man, he can go further. But when he gets on the emotional side, then he can go overboard. So therefore, say the match is very good, because a woman can also protect the man from going overboard one way. And they're good at the other part of the exit of living. It's like you go to a man's room and you go to a woman's room, it's different. You know, the man goes in a room and this is your room. He goes there and he does what he does and he doesn't worry about the room. A woman is not like that. She'll change everything, put curtains. She wants this curtains, not that curtains, this picture, that picture, and everything has to be in its place. And it's a different mentality. And then she gets that, then she's comfortable. And you know, but the man, he doesn't really consider those things. What's something he has a room, he's got a room, and now he's interested in something else. So women are more simple like that. So it's a good combination if they're both controlled, they both have knowledge. If the husband is trained and controlled and the wife is obedient, then it's a good combination. But anyway, it's always risky. As we see here, the best, you don't get better than this. Of course, at dittis, you may say a little bit better than ditti. But these are the best, and they got troubles. So these are the lessons we're going to learn from the Bhagavatam, that, you know, man, woman, everything's a problem in the material world. And it's not our business. It's not our business whether you're a demigod, a woman, or a rishi. They're all entangled. They're all involved somehow or other. Unintentionally or intentionally, they're all involved. It's very, very, very entangling, the material world. So this is the lessons we're gonna learn from these sections. And then, and it really has no meaning, has no real substance, all these, whatever happens, has no real meaning for the soul, right? When they leave this body and go into the next chapter, all this is forgotten. So what's the actual use of it? So it doesn't really have any meaning, except when the Lord appears in the story, then that's meaning. When the pure devotee appears in the story, that has meaning. Because there's some spirituality coming to the material existence, the material life. So that's the reality. But we're intrigued by it. We like these stories of intrigue and, you know, romance and wars and all that thing. So that makes it interesting. So then we'll continue hearing, and then we'll bump into Krishna or his avatar or his pure devotee throughout the course of the stories. And that's the real benefit. Otherwise, everything else is superficial. So Krishna's always popping up especially in the Bhagavatam, because these stories are mainly about, you know, where the spiritual potencies involve some or other. That only those kind of stories are told. There are many other Puranas which don't actually talk about incarnations of Krishna. But this Purana, the Bhagavat Purana, it's the best, it's in the mode of goodness, considered the spotless one. This one talks about transcendence. It keeps bringing spirituality, transcendence, Krishna's devotees, and the devotion and the process of devotional service. So that's the only benefit, really. Of course, you get the standards of how to live, the best way to live your life, and, you know, we have these different role models that we can also learn from. But the ultimate issue is what's the use? You know, who comes out better? Who comes out? Whether, you know, she kills Indra or Indra kills her, doesn't that really have any meaning at the end of life? It doesn't, you know, you're still going to take birth again and do it all over again in a different scenario. So that we should understand, real business of life is to become devoted to Krishna, or self-realization. It says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the difference between the man and the woman, the wife is saying, we should do this, we should get this, we should go. He said, yes dear, good idea. But he's, in his mind, he's thinking, actually the purpose of life is self-realization. He's going, yes dear. He doesn't say, don't be stupid. The purpose of life is self-realization, because he knows that she's a woman. She has him. He said, yes dear. He doesn't do it. Most of the stuff he doesn't do. So this is how a first-class husband, a cultured husband, would say, yes dear, oh, very good. But he's very sweet, very nice. Yes, dear, I've agreed with her. But he's always thinking, the real purpose of life is self-realization. No. that's the advice of Bhagavatam. If the husband's not like that, then the wife should be like that. Straighten the husband out, you know, at least in our section. If your husband's not very proper, then you straighten him out. Hey, you know your business as a husband is. You're supposed to guide us back to Godhead. Somehow or other, we got to become devotees of Krishna. And then it's all over. And we go back there. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srivapada ki, Jai Gopram Nandi, Hare Krishna.